Okay, good afternoon. I think we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to USIP. I'm Darina Biko. I'm with the Conflict Analysis and Prevention Program here. And this is a meeting of our USIP Liberia Working Group, and we're here today to talk about how to integrate women into Liberia's new security forces. And this is a particularly challenging endeavor, one because of the relationship between the security forces and women and communities in the past, some unique challenges that women face at the educational level. And we have with us here six very accomplished women. They are part of the Initiative for Inclusive Security's ninth colloquium. They're part of a group of 30 women who come from Afghanistan, Haiti, Colombia, Israel, and Palestine. I think I have all of that. And so we are sponsoring, IIS, Inclusive Security, is sponsoring this meeting with USIP. So I will very briefly just introduce our participants, and we'll hear from them, and then I'll turn it over to everyone for a discussion. So I'll start with my immediate left is Asatu Ba Kenneth, and she has served with the Liberian National Police and currently works as the Deputy Inspector General for the of Police for Administration. Ms. Ba Kenneth founded the Liberian Muslim Women's for Peace, and she's president of the Liberian Female Law Enforcement Association, served as second vice president of the Board of Women NGO Secretariat. Seated next to Mrs. Ba Kenneth is Siata Harris Clark. She's the Special Assistant to the Minister of National Defense and Director of the Staff Secretariat. She manages all ministry information. Ms. Clark also served as the treasurer for the Economic Community of West African States Citizen Union. And at her left is Ms. Siru Konagarlo. She's the executive director of the Women's NGO Secretariat of Liberia, which is an organization that connects women NGOs dealing with health, education, social justice, women's rights, and security sector reform. She was also a member of NDI's pre-election assessment delegation in Sierra Leone's 2007 elections. To my right, I'll start with Precious Mitchell. She's a founding member of the Security for Women Through Advocacy Coalition, where she works to transform Liberians' image of the security sector and dispel misconceptions of the army and police that have developed after 14 years of war. She is also the Gender and Public Relations Officer for the Society for Women and AIDS in Africa in Monrovia. Seated next to her is Ms. Abla Williams. She's the former commissioner of Liberia's Bureau of Immigration and Naturalization, and where she's currently now the deputy commissioner. And in her current position, Ms. Williams enforces the alien and nationality law of Liberia. And finally, we have Regina Sokanditea, who was elected to the House of Representatives in 2005 general elections. She is on the Defense Committee, which has legislative oversight of security sector reform. And she's also Secretary General of the Liberian Women's Legislative Caucus. So we have lots of experience at the table. The way we're organizing this is we'll have the three panelists to my left kind of frame the discussion, open up the discussion, and then we'll have very quick interjections from the three panelists on my right, and then we will open it up to everybody. So if you would like to start.
Okay. Thank you very much. As you are aware, we all are from Liberia, and Liberia has suffered a 14-year civil crisis where there was a complete break of law. There was no rule of law. And everybody were loyal to those who placed them in authority. And so this brought about the restructuring and reforming of the security apparatus. And there was a peace accord which was signed in Ghana, which called for the reform and the restructuring of the security structure. And to be specific, with the police, the Liberian National Police. The police was to dissolve the SOD, which was responsible for rapid response. And this name SOD was misinterpreted because of the attitudes of those that were in that section or unit. They were referred to, it was a special section for rapid response, but people misconstrued the name and called it Sons of the Devil, which the attitudes were really like Sons of the Devils. And these were disgruntled boys who were brought into the police by these factional leaders who had input in recruiting officers for the police. They were not placed on payroll, regular payroll. They were paid by the former president, Charles Taylor, from his own pocket. And so because of that, they felt they had more power and more control, more than those who were leading the police at that time. So they went on carrying on things that they felt were in their own interest and not the state interest. So when the United Nations Police went to Liberia, they saw the need to reform the police. And this brought about the resignation of everybody that they met in the police, including myself. If you were in the police at that time, you had to resign your post and reapply and be vetted and be qualified for training, which took place. And this process brought about the deactivation of police officers. Deactivation meant that people who had overstayed in the police, because according to our civil service law, after 25 years, you are retired. They refer to that as long service. So those who were to be retired were retired. And some were deactivated because of their qualification. Some of them were not high school graduates. But as you all are aware that we are here because we are here to promote gender sensitivity within the security sector. So most of our female officers that were qualified were deactivated. Qualified in a sense that they had experience within the security sector. They knew what they wanted to do after serving the police for more than 15 or 20 years. But because they were high school dropouts, so they were not qualified to remain in the police. So they all were deactivated. With this training that we have had, we are now advancing that recommendations be advanced in order for these very women who were deactivated to be given the opportunity to have accelerated learning where they can come back on board, because they have spent most of their lives within the police. They know nothing besides the police, but because of their high school qualification, they have been deactivated. With the training aspect and recruitment, the United Nations Police is doing its best to recruit females. We have trained about from class 1 to class 32 from the restructuring aspect. But only class 32 had an all-female officers trained. Reason is that the low percentage of female within the police brought the need for the accelerated learning through the Ministry of Gender and Development and along with the Education Ministry of Liberia. They designed a special program where these women can be trained. Because we have women all over, because of the capacity to go to school, they could not. Some of them were breadwinners for their family. Some of them dropped from school because they had to have children during the crisis. So they never had the opportunity to go to school, but they want to become useful citizens. So this program has been put into place to encourage them to see reason to be good citizens and to also give their contribution to the country. So before we left, they had a first graduation of 105 female officers. And I wish you had the opportunity to see these officers. They have refined themselves. They look different from where they came from. I was part of the recruitment process that brought them into the system, and I know from where we took them, and they appreciate all stakeholders that contributed to their coming to the police. With deployment and assignment, women are not given the opportunity. Regardless of all of the advocacies that we have put into play, it is still not being recognized. You have female and male going to the training academy. They do the same thing. They have the same criteria to enter the academy. But when they graduate from the academy, opportunities are only given to the male officers. They believe that female officer must always prove herself before she can be given opportunity. And that's not what happens to the men. And we are trying to discourage the old boys network. And that's one of the main problems that we may have in the security. We are also encouraging them to have specialized skills. We want to have women who can be accident investigators. We want to have women who can be trained in sexual exploitation and abuse, because we believe that women victims are more comfortable in reporting cases to them. And they can be used for intelligence gathering. They can be used for the searches of female. And they can be used for so many purposes. They know how to stabilize the situation. So we are advocating for more female into the security sector, whether it's immigration, it's fire service, it's in the military. We need more women because we know they have the techniques and the expertise to deliver. And with the society that we find ourselves in, you know that the moment you mention the word security or police, the first gender you imagine is a male. We want to change this notion. We want the world to know that women and men are not rivals, but they should be seen as partners in every aspect of the society. They should work together. If the woman is qualified, give her the job. If the man is qualified, it's seen. Let me come back to the recruitment process. The United Nations Police is working in collaboration with the National Police to recruit female. We know the recruitment is taking place, but we are not looking at the numbers. For us, the number doesn't matter. We want quality. We want quality women into the police. It's not because we want numbers. We go into the other community and sensitize the people to see reason to join the police. And then if you get into the organization, looking at where we're coming from and where we are going, we need qualified and professional people. We just don't want to bring any high school person who just want to find somewhere to be and don't have interest in a job. So we are also advocating that these officers that were deactivated, these female officers that were deactivated, should have good programs that can bring them back, seek funding to see how their capacity can be built up to the high school level so they can come back to the police. And then we know that the United Nations, United States, Liberian government will no longer spend much money on the training in the security aspect because they are already trained. It's just a matter of giving them that opportunity to build their capacity at that level. So ladies and gentlemen, this is just a brief history of how our security looked like back home. I thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Clark?
Thank you. Well, I would like to speak on the military. I work for the Ministry of National Defense, as you are aware, because you have been told. The Ministry of National Defense oversees the day-to-day running of the AFL. Civilian control, that's the central administration. It takes care of the military. Now, as you all are also aware, the CBA demanded that there must be some reform. Now, in having a reform, there are a lot of challenges as well as opportunities. You may have read, you may have heard the story of the all AFL. The image went bad because of what? Lack of incentives. Probably if they had those things that they needed to keep them as viable as they should have been, the level of destruction would not have been caused today. But those things were lacking. Now, in order to upgrade our AFL to certain standards, there must be some changes. Some may not like it, but it was all done for the good of the country. I've seen this to say, we have heard of stories that, oh, the deactivated soldiers are complaining, this and that. But that's a small issue, even though it could grow into a bigger one. But that's a small issue because we are looking for a way to move forward. We have a new transformation. Madam President is doing her best to bring Liberia back to where she belongs. We need to reclaim our possession. And in doing that, our security, our military aspect, we have to be stable. And how are we going to do this? We're not going to have anybody come into the AFL who doesn't represent himself or herself. What do I mean? If you are not up to the task, you are not nationalistic, we will not have you there. You must be willing to sacrifice, because those other soldiers, most of them did not make the sacrifices that we expected them to have made. So with now the training of the new AFL, it is being done by our contractor, the Dancor contractor, along with PAE. Now, what they are doing, you must be a high school graduate or close to that equivalent. You're not going to have somebody come in as a recruit who doesn't know how to read and write. It makes no sense. Because when we had our war, we thought HIMARS were light poles. We thought HIMARS were the basic facilities that we lack today. So we must graduate from that. So the basic is you must be a high school graduate. If you must be an officer, you must be a college student. All right? Now, it doesn't even stop there. What the Americans are doing, thanks to them, they are vetting. You can't just give me your information and it's taken. No, you have to go through vetting processes. That includes aptitude tests, moral conduct, as well as medical. When you pass those, then you are an applicant to be recruited. Any one factor, short of any one factor, you are out. That one makes it very hard. Now, our key discussion here is to advocate for more women to get involved in the process. Because if we have women involved in the process, we're going to have a change. Women have passion, even though there's no passion in the army. But they still do have some passion. And if you have more women involved, they feel that they are part of a system. And you cannot just do this by having numbers. Yes, number is good. We are opting for 20%, which is very good. But we need to have them rehabilitated. 14 years, maybe 20 years. Some of those women who want to become somebody were disenfranchised, either because of economic reasons or other reasons. We have to build up their capacity and their skills. We are opting for accelerator programs to bring these women up to power that will be able to do something for themselves. And joining the army nowadays in Liberia is something that is considered very prestigious. Come February 11, we'll be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the AFL, starting from the Frontier Force, Liberia Frontier Force. It's a 100-year thing, and we're going to make it very big. We intend to make it big and nationwide. We want to reclaim our possession in Liberia. So if we have to do so, we have to start with stability. Once you have stability, the rest will flow. I'd like to submit for now and then entertain questions at a due time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll now hear from Ms. Barlow.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to exchange with you some of the challenges involved in the inclusion for women into the security sector of Liberia. We have our paper here that talk about or the process. I will first of all, they asked us to talk about the challenges, but I want to look at the process, the government and the international community, how they work together to refund the whole security sector in Liberia. The government created a able environment for the international community to come in and provide funding. But during that process, they have criteria that have been set. And some of the criteria are not necessary for me as a person from the civil society and looking at security sector and looking at the inclusion of women. Because if you look at the criteria that have been set by some of the sectors, she talked about the military and she talked about the police. But for instance, if you talk about the military, how do we want women to be included? You cannot ask me if I have obtained an age to be less than 45 or 38. I want to join the military, but I do not need to claim a successful war to be included into the military because I'm a professional accountant and social worker. My skills as accountant and social worker can be utilized in the military, can be utilized in the police, but I don't need to claim a successful war. So we in civil society, the criteria are too stiff. At some point, you have to be flexible to have women included into the security sector. Two, we are talking about the inclusion of women. Why women? Women bring new value, women bring new face to the whole security sector. If you go back looking at the record of the security sector, the military, the police, they all were part of the crisis in Liberia. They were part of the fighting forces, and we know what they did. You know, you read a lot, I don't have to tell you. But so to include women in the process, if I have search or arrest, if you have a woman going to implement an arrest or search, she will search me as a woman in a different way if you have a male coming to search me, because he will be touching me. We don't have all the equipment in Liberia. So there's a need to include women in the military, in the police, because they bring that change, they bring that flavor. I can just share with you when we had a riot in town one of these days, where we had all Indian female or police of the United Nations, and they sent them up to go and continue the riot. And those who were rioting were dominantly men, youth that are not employed. And when they saw the all-female police, they started laughing. They said, oh, why are they sending women to come here? They just want her to pull her into church. Because when we touch them, they will say, oh, the Liberian men let to assault women. And then my friend called me, she said, see, we know the new police brought a different thing. You need to start advocating for to have more women into the sector. So if you have women, they bring a different flavor to the table. Then we talk about how can we encourage women to join? We have the one we call the Jehovah Witness approach. The United Nations Police and the Liberian National Police work with us as civil society. We go from house to house, go in the community, talk to parents, because there are some parents who would dare send their children to enter the security sector to be recruited because of the experience that they had. Some of them were raped by soldiers, some of them were beaten by soldiers, so they don't want their children to join. So we go there and tell them, we say, look, we have a new era in Liberia. We need your daughters to join the police. We need your daughter to join the military. So we go to them, talk to them one-on-one, and encourage them to be a part of the process. The information dissemination has to be very clear. And that one challenge we have in the civil society, we don't get information from Eastern, for instance, private security that have been hired to go and do the training on the ground for Eastern. Dankor, you don't know the TOR, you don't know the turn of reference. How do you monitor? How do you make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to do? So if you have the information, they will go in a field to the community to tell the women and girls to join the military, join the police. You able to clearly tell them what are the criteria, who benefit, and what you as a librarian, if you get into the military or the police, you are doing a service to your country. You providing services to your country. If you as a woman, you are assigned for instance to the border as a security personnel. If I'm coming in doing border trade, definitely your manner of approach, the way you handle the issue, it will be quite different from a male that is coming to inspect me, that is coming to check me. So this is why we are seeing as women, it's very important that we include women in all sectors. And one of the challenges that we have right now, the security sector is not done in an inclusive way. We only have two sectors that is benefiting. That is the military and the police. What happens to the immigration? We have cross-border trade going on. We have people coming in all over the country. When you talk about security, you have to take that into consideration. The immigration is not being restructured at all. There's no funding for immigration. We have women crossing the border, going into the different countries, bringing goods in. Who will inspect if anybody coming in with drugs?
anybody coming in will arm. Because the immigration is not being restructured. Everybody pay attention to the military. Who knows, maybe Liberia may not go to war in the next 10 years. The military will be in the barracks. They will not have nobody to they don't interface with the community. So if you lay emphasis on all sectors of the security and include women in the process, then you're doing it at all levels. You will not have to be doing one and the other keep going down. So that's why we are saying do it across the board. Do the restructuring for all sectors of the security. Don't do two and leave the rest of the security sector off. So I will stop here. If you have questions, specific questions you can ask, then we can answer.
Thank you. Now I want to turn to the panelists on my right, and if you might briefly just kind of, you know, react or interject. Thanks.
I'm Precious Mitchell, and I work with the civil society. I wear two hats. I work with the Security for Women Through Advocacy Coalition and with the Society for Women and AIDS in Africa. And both my work have to do with women and security. To answer two of your questions, how are women being encouraged to join the security forces? I'll tell you what we do. At the Security for Women Through Advocacy Coalition, we do the Jehovah's Witness approach, as she said. We go into the communities, and why we came up to go into the communities is that when we went and started to ask girls and young women why they don't want to join the forces, they're like, going to the barracks is intimidating. We all have already had this bad misconception about the army. There are a lot of, everyone's afraid of the army since 1980s. All the kids that born and grew up in Liberia don't have a good impression about the army. So we in our coalition decided to take the military to the communities. So what we do in our organization, we go to the communities, we handpick girls who we think will qualify to join or to be recruited. We ask them some of their fears, we ask them certain questions, and then we call them to a forum into their community and get the DICOP person responsible for training to come into these communities and interact with these girls. And fortunately for us, the girls who have been recruited into the Liberian Army, the Armed Forces of Liberia, are also willing to come. And they come because they are mentors for us. They come and talk to their friends, tell them their fears, tell them those fears that they had when they went into the security, when they went to sign up. Most of them, biggest fear was handling a gun, trying to hold a rifle, trying to load a rifle. And they're like, yes, I was afraid. I didn't want to do it, but here I am. I know that the security is not all about war. So we, in all of the communities, we have these interactions with people from the AFL and the DICOP, and then these girls can ask all of those questions to change the misconceptions of the new armed forces of Liberia. To answer your second question, the third question, how can women's involvement in the security sector reform help change the image of the security? I'll tell you a little story, and I think that should answer the question. There, I said I also work for the Society for Women and AIDS in Africa, and I interview women living with HIV and AIDS. I write their case studies, and I would say 50% of those women I have interviewed were raped by military personnel. There's a particular woman who was raped 4 times in Liberia by military personnel. Because of the stigma, she had to run away. She went to Guinea, where she thought she would start a new life. She had her daughter. Her daughter was lost from her, but she found her daughter later. And while she was in Guinea, she heard that her daughter was in Liberia. She tried to make her way back to Liberia, and she was gang raped 4 times by a second set of, you know, military in Guinea, another 4 times. This woman came down with HIV and AIDS. She found her daughter. She came back home. She went full bloom. She was counseled. She got on her medications. She's all right today. The most interesting thing is her daughter is very young. She's very intelligent. She's in her 3rd year of college, but she wants to join the military. The mother has not told her daughter her status. This girl is telling everyone, I want to join the army. My mother doesn't want me to join the army. How do I break the news to my daughter that I'm HIV positive? And today, because of militaries, because of army personnel who raped me. And then she comes to us. But before her daughter brought up the issue of joining the military, she had brought her daughter to us to train her on HIV and AIDS prevention, you know, and modes of transmission. So we've been working with her daughter, and she brings this case to us. What do I do? So the Society for Women AIDS in Liberia worked with the daughter on the HIV prevention. Then she came to the Security for Women through advocacy, where I still am one of the members. And she's like, you need to tell this girl my status. I don't want to tell her my status because she's all I have. I don't want her to leave me. I don't want her to run away from me. But this woman goes into communities with us and breaks silence. She teaches people on stigma discrimination, but her daughter doesn't know. But because of her daughter's interest, she's faced with a predicament how she's going to tell her daughter, because she doesn't want her daughter to join, and her daughter is so close to joining, and they are breaking the relationship because she doesn't want to do what her mom doesn't want her to do what she wants to do. And then she finally have us to call her daughter, you know, and tell her daughter the situation. And she breaks, you know, silence to her daughter that, hey, I'm HIV positive. She said, Mommy, you are lying. And the news, you know, went out. It's true, but I was raped by 8 times, 4 in Liberia, 4 in Guinea, mm-hmm. by soldiers. So, with that story, we as a dedication here, we the women of Liberia, we think that if we have more women in the security sector, women wouldn't rape women. Because we know, and there will not be war. Because we know women are good negotiators. There will not be a case of a mother preventing her daughter from joining the army. There will not be a case of women crossing the borders and having been raped or being raped. There will not be a case of women being raped at night or women running from the police. We should run to the securities instead of running from them. I thank you.
Well, I'm Abla Williams from Immigration, and I too wear two hats. I work with the government in the public sector, and in the private sector, I'm a member of the Association of Female Lawyers who advocate for the rights of women and children. But again, we are looking at including women in the security sector. We are saying that we need more women in the security sector because women make a difference. The Liberian women played a role in security. We played a role to stop the war. And you all around here have spent your money to see that Africa will have no more conflict. Now that the conflict is over, you need to sustain the peace. We need peace and development. So we see a different definition for the word security. What encouragement the Liberian government has done? I am an example. Yes, I'm a female. I'm professionally trained as a lawyer, professionally trained as a police officer, and I was appointed to head the Bureau of Immigration. So women see me as a mentor. My sister here is a professional female police officer. She's been in the police for 25 years, but now in Liberia, we make up only 8% women in the security sector. Our management styles are different. We consult with people, we confer before we make decisions, and we simple things like arrest. The way a female police officer would arrest would be different from the way a male police officer would arrest other people. So we are talking about change. We are stakeholders in security. You've always looked at spending money on guns to stop a war, spending money on the institutions, but you have to spend money on men. This time we say spend your money on women in security. Let us join because we are partners in a country, not only men live there. Men and women live in a country to have peace. We want to have roofs over our heads. We want to have our children go to school because, again, all of us sitting here lived in Liberia during the complete 17 years. We had to run, and while we were running, we wanted rule of law. We wanted good governance. We cannot have good governance if we stay in Liberia. We do not interact with females to make sure that we have electricity, that we have employment for women, that we have other definitions of security, like only combating crime. So that is why we are saying we need more women. Another thing is the international community involvement with integrating women. Yes, we do have the international community involvement. They have programs for recruitment, but they are not gender sensitive. We are saying now that they are in Liberia. We have a United Nations team. For the first time now, they have brought an all-female police. And because of their presence in Liberia, women are saying, I too want to be a police. So that is one example. Another example is we have DynCorp in Liberia that is training the army. Ciara here is a graduate of that training, and she came the first in her class. So if you can see her here as an example, then you know other Liberian women would like to join and become better security officers. And even though she became the deuce of the class, she's not in combat. She's in the civil, she's a civil aspect of the army, the military. So she's in administration. So we are saying other women joining in the security sector can make a difference. Another issue that was raised is about the inclusion. Everybody in this place wants to travel. And maybe one day you might want to visit Liberia. And visiting Liberia, you want to move maybe as a female going to Liberia. You interact with the first group of officers. Some of you will not want to be touched by male officers. You want to be touched by females or interviewed by females. The way in females interview you and ask you, hello, how are you, can I help you? Might be different from a man saying, hello. So that too, that is very different. Yes, women handle issues differently. So we are saying that this time around, we should get rid of the traditional role of only men being in security and let the women join partnership with the men to ensure that we all live in a safe and better place and that we all make sure that no more there will be conflict. Liberia has a good example because presently we have a female who is dynamic as our president and the first female leader in Africa and Liberia. And with her being there, we don't want the stone to turn. We want the women to continue. We have 5 women in cabinet, 3 of those women in commerce and foreign affairs. And maybe through them, other areas of security can be touched, like how good housing facilities, good economic facilities, employment for women, and that will bring a better security. Because when you live somewhere that is safe, you won't be thinking of combating crime. So I turned over to our oversight responsibility, that is those who make the laws to ensure that we enforce them. We cannot work in the absence of laws. So we have oversight bodies that will ensure that we do work with the rule of law and good governance. So I turn the floor over to you. I'll be open for questions after my colleague shall have spoken.
Well,
I just wanted to remind everyone to turn off your cell phones. That's why we keep hearing that sound is interfering with the mic.
Okay, I want to say thank you. The ladies have said almost all about Liberia. But we want to say thank you on behalf of the government of Liberia. We want to say thank you to the United States government for the level of support so far that have brought us to enjoy 4 years of peace.
As an oversight, as everybody talk about DynCorp, DynCorp is doing pretty well in Liberia. The only problem we have as an oversight is that up to now we are not seeing the document as to how the army was dissolved and reformed. The document need to be in our hands as an oversight to be able to compliment them. Because at the end of every good job, there should be someone who will say, yes, thank you for a job well done. The one example for the oversight is that the army was created by an act of legislation and is being dissolved without a new act. Because there should be an act of legislation creating, dissolving the old army and creating the new army as a matter of law. But that hasn't been done, and so when I came to the house, it faced a lot of controversy as to what happened, what went wrong. Because according to the CPA, they said they should restructure all security sector. If we are dissolving it, then of course it should go through this law. And another thing is that what happened is that we are high imperial presidency, and this is the first time that we have election for legislature. And so it's that we are picking up and it making it difficult. Maybe that's why they find it difficult as to who to go to or where to start from. But I believe they should have started from the house. And so if we call it, we call the Minister of Defense, he said, well, I met it on the ground, but why it's not done properly, it's not done at all. We don't want their effort to go in vain, because if the whole veto what you are doing, of course, that means everything will go in vain, and that's whose job. We don't want it to go in vain. Another recommendation that we have as an oversight from the civil society, as she said, as it was said in the CPA that they will train the security forces of the country. We are appealing that the training will go across the board. Because we got the army, yes, they are being trained, they got all the support, but there's no human rights training according to, even though we are not seeing the manual, but there's no human rights training that should be there. Because during the war, there were a lot of violations of human rights. And we don't want this new army to come up tomorrow, even though we're not expecting war, to come up with another human rights violation. So, besides the army, we want a training for the security apparatus. As we're going through the reform, we want the entire security sector to be reformed so that we can change the old mind and then come to a new mind as a country from war. Because what is happening in the army, those that are being trained, if you see some of them in the street, they are so intelligent, and then you see the other security apparatus that still remain with the old man, they still get a behavior that we should not be expecting after war. And another thing is that our police to be able to combat crime, they need more logistics. Because if we call when there's problem at night, and you call 911, sometimes it takes a long time for them to come, and sometimes they will not come at all. It's because there's no logistics. I think they got 15 cars, and they get one car assigned to a county. So if you get, like for Muscle Rider, we get 14 districts, we get one car. When you are in district 14 and you call for a police, you may not get the police before they come, then the crime has already been committed. We don't want to be the victim, so we want to recommend this, that the police will have more logistics so that they can be able to combat crime. And we are placing emphasis on the training and reforming of the entire security sector, because according to report, we've gone 85% unemployment. That's a big challenge for us as a government. And so if we get a security reform, if we get a security reform, we'll be able to attract investors that will bring about employment so that the employment can be reduced. Because if we get a huge number of unemployment, the security it will also create a security problem for the country. Unemployment, as we're going beyond security being just the military, unemployment is also a security threat.
Because we got a common saying in Liberia, a hungry man is an angry man. A man who is not able to take something home to his family, we want to unroll. We want to go, as you pass in, they want to check from you. So we are appealing for the training, the reform process to go across the board, especially the security that we meet on a daily basis. As my colleague was saying, at the border point, we need the immigration to be trained, and those that take care of the president, we also need to train them. And you know, laws are made, we got a lot of laws that need to be implemented. If we don't go through all of this training, we can make the cool laws. They will not also help us. Because if we say, if they are training, if the security sector is trained, and there's law that if you are trained, you will take care of this aspect, and there will not be overlapping of function, and where the police will not know where to stop and where the army stop and where the other security will stop. And so we want to thank you. We'll stop here. We'll stop here and entertain question. I mean, question maybe from the question where we can go. Oh, thank you.
Okay, well, the floor is open to your questions and comments. If you could just introduce yourself.
One of the things I wanted to raise with you, and I'm asking this from having spent the last 7 years in East and West Africa, different countries in terms of different areas, and particularly with empowerment of women. One of the questions in terms of the education aspect and attracting women to the security sector, if you have some idea of means that you're either doing now or that you're engaging in beginning to introduce the possibility to the young women within Liberia, particularly coming out of the history that we've seen recently, in terms of the possibilities and why the security sector versus some other possibilities, how you're looking at introducing that possibility to the young women. If you had some sense of what is some of the thinking with that, and what are some of the barriers? Because I know particularly in the schools that we've been working with in Liberia, having seen that military impact from a different perspective, it's had a very damaging effect. The other question, just real quick, is also in the empowerment groups that we have been working with women in different countries, one of the things that have been very effective that at least has been shown is those women within the country who have been exemplary models of attracting women to whatever sector it is, whether it is security or otherwise, how you're identifying within Liberia people like yourselves and being accessible to the women who might possibly be interested, how you're making yourselves available within the country and within the women's organizations, particularly the NGOs that are in the country. What are some ways that you're either doing that or thinking about doing that? Mm-hmm. And the last question real quick is in terms of connection with other women's organizations that may be in countries that are in that sector, in the West African setting, that may also be helpful in both knowing your history and being next door to you, being helpful in introducing some of the ideas that they have, if there's been any attempts or thoughts.
Good evening. My name is Rosemary Segel. I'm the Vice President of AMANI, with Ambassador AMANI Ministries. And we advocate for crime and violence. My son was murdered. I come from Kenya. My son was murdered in Kenya in 2004. That's why I took the initiative of talking about fighting crime and violence. I just want to thank the United States Institute of Peace, and Mr. Metoe, whom I have known, and the Liberian Honorable Women, not men now. What you are talking really, really true and from experience. It's not a story, it's not from anybody, and nobody, you know, can say what you have said because you have spoken from experience, looking at it as women. And I'm just happy I'm here and you have heard and you know what is going on in Kenya now. Through your talk and discussion, I think it's a very good model to use of women. Because women are passionate, women are loving, and they commit themselves with what they are doing. So as I talk, I was just planning to come to Liberia. I met the president when she came here, the Minister of Finance, and I was just on my way planning to come to Liberia. So thank you so much, your model. Keep up, and we are going to take your model to Kenya and other African countries. I think if we live like that, I think Africa would be a better country being led by women. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll take one last question, and I'll turn it over.
Yes, my name is Mary Mohan. I was wondering, is there legislation against rape in Liberia? Is it a crime? I mean, are they actually prosecuting? Because it's not just Liberia. You hear about all these rapes in other African countries. And are they really clamping down on that and teaching it in schools and so forth?
Okay.
I will take the last question first. Talk about legislation against rape in Liberia. We have the rape law that was recently passed. But the challenge with that rape law is that if you have an alleged rapist and that person is taken to court, the judicial system in Liberia is so slow and frustrating and it's not decentralized. If I was from Central Liberia, Bourne County, I had a case, it means that I have to come down Monrovia. And the process of traveling from one country to the state for my case to be heard, I would not want to go through that. Secondly, another challenge we have is the stigma in our community if I'm raped as a woman. The process in the court, the trial process, I have to stand in front of a normal person to say, yes, I was raped. Sometimes the judge in chamber, hey, he's not gender sensitive or she's not gender sensitive. How did the rape take place? Did he carry your two legs up? Some of the questions are sometimes intimidating. So there's a law, yes, but the process of trial to prison and all of that, just before we came, they released 7 alleged rapists because government did not give lawyers for those survivors. Because under our law, rape is a crime, it's a state versus the defendant. So if I'm raped, the government is supposed to protect me in the court, provide a lawyer for me. But sometimes we don't have enough lawyers. So they if I'm in Henarin, Bourne County, I have maybe 10 or 15 cases. Okay. It is not just sufficient. So we have problems with the judicial system. That's a challenge. We have a rape law, yes. But that's not all the rape law. You create awareness. People are not reporting rape cases. But the process of the trial is so frustrating. And it has a lot of hurdles.
Okay, again, let me add to my colleague there. Yes, we do have a rape law. That is why, again, we are emphasizing for war women to be included in the security. We have male judges. So the way the male judges define rape is different from the way a female judge would handle the case. We have interest, we have passion for that survivor. So in the criminal justice system, if there are more female lawyers trained, clerks trained, even in a hospital, we could have police doctors there. They are the first persons that the survivors meet. If I'm raped, if I have to meet a medical practitioner or a nurse who is a male nurse and I'm already traumatized, I wouldn't want to go to court. I prefer being silent. And if I have to go to a clerk who will think that, oh, rape is something that we're supposed to handle at home, and he will take my case file and put it under the table, then I may as well not go to court. So it's not only the laws that we have. but the implementation, the process, and that is a challenge in Liberia. We have a good definition of rape now. We say yes, the rape case should be held in camera. That is, we're not supposed to talk. But then again, the media, how many persons have read the law itself in depth? We have different vernaculars. We speak, the law itself needs to be carried out throughout the country. That's a challenge. So maybe I would say that in short for the law, and somebody else will talk on some other issues.
If I may add on this rape issue, we at SWACO for short had a case with a girl who died as a result of rape. And her parents didn't have money to bury her, but the alleged rapist was raping she and her sister constantly for, I think, on 4 or 5 occasions. And she was 9, her sister is 11. And she got sick and she died. SWACO women took up the case. And we've been walking behind her, and we were finally, we buried her. We marched the streets of Monrovia with the casket, along with the gender ministry, but we marched the streets of Monrovia with her casket. We prepared her a nice dress, and we had her schoolmates march with us, and we're singing "No More Rape," you know, and that made an issue. We had the case in the court. As it was rightly said, our judicial system is so slow. The guy has been in jail for the last few months. Couple of us had to travel and on job assignments. When we got back, we couldn't even find one of the documents. We're fortunate to be able to retrieve one of the documents, and almost fighting to get the case on the docket. Call the mother, call the surviving sister. Mother was willing to come and testify because that's her only child. The other sister is a half sister for the husband. And then the brother of the alleged rapist comes to the mother and says, you know, our brother has been in jail for too long, and here's $296. If you do not withdraw the case, then we'll be talking something else. This woman is poor. She's hungry. She was tempted to take the money. She pulled her hand and she pulled it back. She pulled her hand to receive the money and she pulled it back. She was suffering from indecision. And her husband came in and was like, why are you wasting time to take this money? Let's just forget it. The girl is dead. She won't come back to life. And then why I said women should be in the security sector. The mother caught herself again. She told her husband, don't take the money. The women organization have taken up that case. We're sure that we're going to see our end result to this. We're going to have justice. And he said, you sure of that? Because there are other cases. And then he went giving his wife examples of other cases that nothing came out of. She said, please take my word this time. I know we need that money so badly, but please don't take the money. All right? When we had her to come to the temple of justice, she was afraid, because when the family of the alleged rapist were leaving, they said, well, you refused the money, but you may not live to tell this story if our brother is convicted. So now we are battling with trying to convince her to come and testify. We need a safe room for her, but she's still not too sure she can do it. You see, so most of the fears, why most of the cases are not forwarded or people don't proceed with the cases, are the threats that come along with it.
Okay. Yes, I just wanted to add to it that rape was a taboo in our country before, but thanks to the Association of Female Lawyers that came together and ensured that we have an act on that. This brought about the establishment of the Women and Children Protection Section at the police, because we know that rape existed, but it was something that was never heard of. And some of the reason after we did research was because there was nowhere to report some of these cases. The police was there, and because of the stigma, a woman could not feel free to just come to the police station at the church or quarter and say, my child was raped or I have been raped. But since the establishment of that section, people are not feeling free to come, even though some of the cases are old cases, and because before you can prove rape, you must have sufficient evidence. But we are teaching them, we are sensitizing them along with the community service section of the police to go to schools and go to other places, churches, the mosques, and what have you, and educate people to see reason why they should not compromise cases. For instance, what Pressure just talked about. Because if you compromise a case, it embarrass the police to go to the court and testify. Even if the case have all the evidence that you need to prove in court, once the perpetrator have paid the family of the victim, it is impossible because the victim will not be willing to come back to say anything about her case. And then another challenge is that the government of Liberia needs its own safe home for women who are sexually abused. It is only UNICEF, along with other NGOs that have the private safe homes. And these are things that bring more stigma and make the victim withdrawn. Because if the victim will have to go back into her community, it is a different thing. But they need the safe home that she can stay as long as she wishes to stay there and see how she can be reconciled and come back to her community and maybe reunify with her family. And talking about rape, well, with our experience also, it's a strange thing to us, though it used to happen. The case of being sodomized, we have that problem now. It is several little boys being sodomized, they raped on, and those are cases too that are coming up, and it's because of the economic aspect of it. You have all of these boys vulnerable, hanging around. They are all breadwinners of the family. So anybody who have little more than what they can offer them, they take advantage of that. So we are throwing it to you all. We know you people come from different places that have influence to assist us. Like, we need every assistance that you can assist us to bring Liberia on par to the international community.
Yeah, maybe I'd like to just talk briefly on the other two questions. You talk about that before he came in. Mm-hmm. Say, what method we using to have women who are not literate or have not met the criteria of education for recruitment into the security sector? One thing we have done along with government and the United Nations missions in Liberia for the police recruitment process was to do an accelerated learning program. We had women, girls, that they didn't finish high school, they didn't have high school education. So we went all in the community to do the outreach program. They signed up to be recruited into the police. The government and the United Nations provided funding and they work in collaboration with the Cali school system. They have the Stella Marie Polytechnic. They have a crash program for them for 3 months, 3 to 4 months, and they graduated and obtained a high school certificate. Then they went to the base to be trained for the police. And talk about connection with women in the region. We have a network of women in the region under the Women in Peacebuilding Network. We do a lot of network on security issues, border, cross-border issues. We do a lot of training. We have that at the region, the Mana River region. We have a lot of connection with women in the region, in Sierra Leone. This is why I was asked to go to Sierra Leone to be from part of the delegation for the election, to spread locally role of women in the election. So we have that. Maybe not that police with that.
Okay, and to my Kenyan sister, it's good that we are here because we bring our experience and we want to say, go back home and make sure that the women hold together. The Liberian women were able to stop the war with our own techniques. We have two of our sisters that are here. They started a women's peace movement. They were able to stop because they put away religion, they put away education, they put away illiteracy, and they all held together as women. They said, no more war, we want peace. And they follow up through the negotiation process. They sat home, they stayed in the streets, and their biggest weapon was, this time around, we will not partnership with the men. And you know the partnership was, we will not have sex with you all until we have peace.
Yes.
So, my Kenyan sisters, that is a reality. It worked. The warlord stopped the shooting. And I think if you do that for Kenya, there will be peace in Kenya like Liberia.
And it also means that if you have to pass a law in your country and you know that the men are involved in implementing that,
give them the condition, sex before that.
And just to say something to what she said, I got a friend in Kenya, Vicky. She works for Global Fund for Women, and she was just in Liberia for a documentary training they did for 22 of our women. And when we heard the crisis, I wrote her one line. I said, wake up, women of Kenya, do something. And she said, Siri, no, I need you to come over here. You got a lot of energy and power. So just to say, you just have to speak as women. And sometimes you hold the whole country hostage. It will look so simple, mm-hmm. but just gather as women. They will not look at all of you and shoot you down.
Yeah.
I remember it happened to us when nobody was crossing that bridge to go to learn. And we defy them. We only information how the American ambassador is going across. So we say, all right, there will not be much shooting today. So we'll go on and we'll follow. Yeah. And everybody was surprised to stop what they were doing. They were watching because they couldn't shoot us. They either had a mother, the sister, the auntie, or the girlfriend, or the wife. They couldn't shoot. So you have to speak out as women. It will be difficult, you know, different from country to country, but there's something unique about your country that you can challenge whatsoever authority and do it peacefully and it will work.
Another thing is that you have to have only one spokesperson so you can be focused instead of you being contradicting one another, regardless of your position in a group. But you have to have one spokesperson, no matter what you know about the group, no matter what information you have. Any press person come, do not speak. Just give the information through that spokesperson, and they will take you serious. And you will be focused and succeed.
Okay, let me take a gentleman.
I'm reading Joseph, I'm the ambassador of the U.S. I'm a little bit curious to find out you, what happened to the young woman was in conflict with her mother.
She told her mother that no one will rape you again, no one will rape me ever. I don't know whether she decided, but in front of us, she said, Mommy, nobody will rape you again, no one will ever rape me. So I have to follow up. I think that meant that I would join. Because if you can give your mother that much courage, I think that's what it meant. But I can let you know if I find out.
Ms. Clark, yes. Justin Goldman, Department of Defense. As far as this most recent iteration of the initial entry training at Barclays, I believe there were 17 women that graduated. Can you speak to that? We've heard a little bit about how they did. Is that a story that the MOD can, you know, express more widely? We've heard the words. Can you... the issue of the DynCorp, in terms of documents, our understanding is that you're able to see those through the Office of Defense Cooperation and the Embassy. Can you talk about how your concerns on that, that I know you cannot see the document itself, but about addressing the concerns that you have through the Embassy?
Okay, let me just take the gentleman behind you and then we'll...
You learn too much now. I'm fine.
My first question will go to Madame Sachi and Professor Jerome. I'm very happy you passed the recommendation of the Police Office. There is this canker worm that normally eats up public people in front of the most canker all over the world. Bribery and corruption. Which is a big concern.
That was a whole woman.
Thank you very much.
My second concern will be when you are answering, you just put some flesh in into when this police force were always dissolved.
Okay.
They
told
that
we're
trained. Okay.
They
can handle the gun now. They can do
something. But you're an example, right? Okay, let me start first with the corruption aspect that you talked about. What we have put into place is that we have better incentives now. For instance, before it was like $300 Liberian, and that is just $5. That was the pay of a patrolman.
$300. That's the equivalent of five United States dollars. And you need to carry food home for your family. You need to pay your children's school fee and what have you. Because I refer to everybody in the police as policemen and women, not police boys and girls. So these are responsible people that you are paying with that. And it was not coming on time. It was not coming on time. As I speak, the former government still have back pay for people who have worked 23 months back pay. How do the people survive? So some of them abandoned their job. Some of them went on WOL, AWOL, leave without absence, to go and do other things. But because people knew them as police officers, so they always feel that they are operating under police. But they were doing things to improve their status. And the other question is what? Okay, the deactivated people, like I told you, when the United Nations took over the restructuring aspect, everyone, if you are in the police, you receive a form, and you fill in the form. And the moment you fill in the form, which means that even if you were colonel, you are a civilian. So you fill in the form with all your qualification that you have, and all should have the original copies. And those will be submitted to the committee responsible for vetting. And then you'll go and be vetted. And during the vetting process, you must show all of those papers, if you're a college graduate, if you're high school, and they have specific questions. Your involvement in the Liberian Civil War, what role did you play? There were specific places that we know that rebels were hiding and they did some other things in those areas. But if you went for interview, you did not know any of those things. You didn't know the information they were coming out with. So if you know you participated, like some of our friends, like the Freeport issue, people never knew the reason why people were asking them for Freeport issue. Yes, I know Freeport. I was there. And where have you? So you have put yourself into a bad shoe. Human rights record. Over the years, people were there. They did not know what was in the personal folders in the personnel division. So the moment OMA took over, they took all of those files from our local police. So we're in their care. So after the vetting, if you are qualified, they will shortlist you for medical. After the medical result, you are recruited at the academy. And you start at fresh as a private. After your graduation at the academy and you come back, you are deployed anywhere, county, central. It was not anything that you could go, because I was a sectional head. I was in charge of community service when I went back to the academy. When I came back, I didn't have my rank anymore. But then, according to some of the policies that they developed, they had a position for those who occupy those positions. So later on, when I came from the academy, the head of the community section should have been assistant commissioner. So then I became assistant commissioner. But then if I didn't have the opportunity to be appointed by the president of Liberia, then I would have stayed being assistant commissioner, and then you go apply again to the promotional board, where you have to be vetted again, you have to be qualified, then you are given that rank with the equivalent of that salary. So people are placed now into position because the deactivation took professional people, veteran people from the police, leaving the police now with the new recruits. And we needed people to help shape the police. So you have to now identify some of the old officers that you believe are qualified and temporarily appoint them into those positions that will carry acting this, acting that, until you can go through the promotional board or recruitment. You talk about arms. Whether the women will do that. Try me and see what they do.
Okay. In addition to what my colleague has said about corruption, I think if you heard, it took our president to put a zero tolerance on corruption. Yes. She was the first to put in her inaugural address. No man has said that. And that's why we're saying we need to have
women in the security sector. The police director is a female, and she takes no nonsense.
Yep.
If you are found corrupt, you are dismissed.
Yes.
You are suspended. They have an investigation board, and it goes the same with other security agencies and administrations where women are head. I headed the Bureau of Immigration for 1 year, and you see me smiling, but see me in my uniform.
In terms of corruption, it is a whole network. Because we see Ellen, yes, as the president of the Popular Liberia. But I see Ellen, if Ellen fails today or tomorrow, I have also failed. Okay. So I also, in my capacity as director of the Women NGO Secretariat, I also serve as watchdog for the government. Because if I'm in a car moving from one point to another, I find any government official, security personnel involved in any corrupt act, I report it immediately because we know what corruption have done to our country. All we went through was because of mass corruption, mismanagement of funding, mismanagement of resources, abuse of offices. So I keep we keep track on it. So it's a whole network of women. It's not just women in government. We also because we have a role in it. Because if they don't perform today, if I want to run for senator for Bonn County, no one want to elect me. They say the women were there, they didn't do anything. So we say as a whole network, we have to help the government in civil, as from the civil society point of view to report any ill in government. That is our role.
Thank you, ladies. To answer your question, sir, for the benefit of our guest audience, the IET simply means initial entry training. Now, the component of a batch of trainees is 500 or 500 plus, but it's within the range of 500. Now, other than the last graduation ceremony, yes, indeed, we had 70 females who graduated, and that was like January 11th. The graduation ceremony were held. Now, those women must have met the basic to have graduated to start their training now. Now, if they do not maintain the status that they have now to have graduated, they're going to be dropped. Now, this is one of the problem my colleague has when it comes to the stiff criteria. But you do not want to put a weakling in the army.
Oh, my God.
You know? So, that's it. So, they will be dropped just in case they don't meet that standard. So, I hope what the civil society is trying to do, maybe we have some, we get some effect, all right? Because I know we are all pushing forward for something good. We have a private now who will take over one of the platoons, Geraldine George. The first group, the first 109 that graduated, she came as one of those, and she came here to the States, got her added training, and what have you. She cannot be a company commander, but she will be a platoon commander, because you see, before nobody knew the merit system within the military. If you went up interior, brought a cow to your boss, he gives you a rank. Mm-hmm. If you bought him a goat, he gives you a rank. But this time around, SSR, through your money, they say no. Mm-hmm. You must merit what you get. All right, so this is what we are doing, and those women, I can only hope and pray, because when I go back home, I'm going to see them, because I didn't see them when they graduated, like you know, I was here, so I'm going to see them and wish them well. Thank you.
Okay, one more question, and then we'll
My name is Lorraine Koch. I'm a student at Georgetown University. And I was just curious, your plan on how to integrate women, like will women be integrated with the male forces? And will there be training for the men? I mean, I imagine in a very male-dominated security force, it would be difficult to just bring in women and have them treated equally. So I'm just curious if you have a plan or if you already have implemented a plan on how to
Like I told you twice that the notion is changing about those who find themselves in the security aspect. Like before, I told you that when you heard the word security or police, the first gender you imagine is a man, but the word is changing. So all the criteria that were put into place for the training process were only a criteria that could fit a male. However, other women have been facing the challenges, taking advantage of that. But we all are saying the same thing, that it should be gender sensitive. Because no matter what we say no longer the men in front, the women in the back. It is now that we all walking side by side. So we are looking at that to see how best, like they spoke about the 6 feet wall. You know, in reality, other women will not be able to claim that. So we are advocating for implementation of some of those criteria to be moderate for women, for more women to have the opportunity.
We are not saying that you should have all training academy for women, no. You can have the standard training academy where both male and female have to go. Or if I am a woman, I want to join the military. I don't want to maybe be bothered, will come back and do the business, yes. Or I want to be maybe a medical doctor. Do I have to claim access for war? Or when do I claim it? Do I claim it? Let me be, I'm a realist. Do I claim it when I'm having my menstrual, I got menstrual pains?
Yeah.
Or do I have another time to claim it? I'm made different from the man. So we want the training to be more gender sensitive. We are not saying be discriminatory, no, but be more gender sensitive. That's all we are saying.
Okay, I just want to thank our panelists for traveling this long way and also taking time out of their very busy schedule the past day. And also thank Inclusive Security. This is our second meeting that we've done with them. They're always great panelists. So thanks to you all as well.
Thank you.